You know, in the matter of obedience, when that jumps out, it jumps in here, jumps out there, and is so cool it couldn't hurt anybody, you know, so don't worry a thing about it. See, I think obedience is the key to a fruitful life. Now, see, but the problem in thinking about obedience, most of us think, well, what do I obey or what haven't I obeyed? Is that right? You think, obey God? Well, I'm sort of obeying. I obey everything I know, and some things I probably don't know, and no, I goof up once in a while. But it's so confused in our mind, we end up not knowing whether we're obedient or disobedient. I don't think God planned this way at all. I think from the Bible, we have very clear instruction about how God gives leading, what we're to obey and what we're not to, and what we're not supposed to obey, and also how we can know the difference. And we don't have to walk around confused, thinking, boy, I got these 10 things I'm working on, because God doesn't work that way. And so I'd like to share one thing on the importance of obeying small things, another on the importance, or I should say, the result of obedience in our life. And the result is an eternal, lasting ministry. And we'll look up some scripture on this. And third, about three things that will hinder us from obeying. Because a lot of times, I think if we identify these things, the obedience part will be a lot easier, because we'll understand why we're being hindered and what we need to do about it. Well, let's take the first one on the matter of obeying small things. And if you have your Bibles, would you turn to 1 Kings 13? Because here in 1 Kings, I think we have an example of a person who was like we are, desirous of being obedient to God, desirous of doing the will of God and having the blessing of God. And yet it gives a little detail of how he disobeyed in a very small thing and what God did about it. Now, we don't know the name of this person, because in verse 1, 1 Kings 13, it says this. And behold, I'll wait till everyone finds it. 1 Kings 13, starting with verse 1. And behold, there came a man of God. That's all it says about him. We don't know his name. We don't know how he was called, how he got the message, where he was from, but it says this about him. And behold, there came a man of God out of Judah by the word of the Lord unto Bethel, and Jeroboam stood by the altar to burn incense. Now listen what the man of God did and said. And he cried against the altar in the word of the Lord and said, O altar, altar, and then the rest of this down is what he said about the altar. In verse 4 it says, And it came to pass, when King Jeroboam heard the saying of the man of God, which he cried against the altar in Bethel, that he put forth his hand from the altar, saying, Lay hold of him, and his hand which he put forth against him dried up, so they could not pull it in again to him. So he put out his arm. Here the man of God had come, spoke against the altar. Jeroboam the king heard about it, and he put out his arm and says, Lay hold of that man. And as soon as he said that, there was his arm. His heart chaffner and mark was probably getting a little pulled out of place, but he couldn't do anything. Couldn't pull his hand back. He soon got the attention of, listen to what it says next. It says, verse 4, And it came to pass, when the king Jeroboam heard the saying of the man of God, then it says, Lay hold of him, and his hand, which he put forth against, dried up, so he could not pull it in again. And the altar also rent, and the ashes poured out from the altar according to the sign which the man of God had given by the word of the Lord. And the king answered and said unto him, Entreat now the face of the Lord, thy God, and pray for me, that my hand may be restored. He soon got the attention of the king, didn't he? I mean, the king couldn't do anything. He says, Well, let's see, let's forget about the altar, let's talk about the arm. Now, man of God, see, this man of God, he really had the word, didn't he? Boy went down there fearlessly, spoke against the altar, kind of shook up the king, and the king says, Lay hold of him, and God wasn't so pleased about that, and his arm. And so, next, the king says, Boy, tell the man of God to do something for me. And the man of God besought the Lord, and the king's hand was restored again and became as before. This man of God was really in touch. And the king said unto the man of God, Come home with me and refresh thyself, and I will give thee a reward. And listen to the conviction of the man of God in verse 8. And the man of God said unto the king, If thou would give me half thine house. I will not go home with thee, neither will I eat bread nor drink water in this place. For so it was charged me by the word of the Lord, saying, Eat no bread, drink no water, nor turn again by the same way that thou camest. Boy, the king says, Boy, you really are in touch. Why don't you come home with me and we can kind of talk this thing over? The man of God says, Oh, no. God told me not to eat bread, not to drink water, and not to... or to return by another way. Well, so he started returning. Another prophet heard about this, and we go down to 17. For it was said unto me by the word of the Lord... This is the other prophet speaking. Let's start with 16, I guess. After he said, I may not return with thee, nor go with thee, neither will I eat bread nor drink water with thee in this place. For it was said unto me by the word of the Lord, Thou shalt eat no bread nor drink water there, nor turn again to go by the way that thou camest. And he said unto him, I am a prophet also, as thou art. And an angel spoke unto me by the word of the Lord, saying, Bring him back with thee into thy house, that he may eat bread and drink water. But he lied unto him. So another prophet, he thought, Boy, I mean, here's a prophet over here who's really in touch, and we should maybe have a little fellowship together. And so he went over and says, Oh, yeah, an angel spoke to me, and you're supposed to come back. And the man of God says, Oh, no. Oh, he says, but an angel spoke to me. What happened? 19. So we went back with him and did eat bread in his house and drink water. And it came to pass, as they sat at the table, that the word of the Lord came unto the prophet that brought him back. And he cried unto the man of God that came from Judah, saying, Thus saith the Lord, For as much as thou hast disobeyed the mouth of the Lord, and hast not kept his commandments, which the Lord thy God commanded thee, but camest back, and hast eaten bread, and drunk water in this place, of which the Lord did say to thee, Eat no bread, and drink no water, thy carcass shall not come into the sepulchre of thy fathers. And in 24 it says, And when he was gone, a lion met him by the way and slew him. And then they went out and checked. In 26 is the final. It says, When the prophet that brought him back from the way thereof, he said, It is the man of God who was disobedient to the word of the Lord. Very interesting, isn't it? Well, I have no trouble keeping this audience awake. Are you all relaxed now? Good, okay. Now, I'm sure you got that point. That was one of the stronger points I wanted to make. You know, it's very interesting here, isn't it? The prophet that told him to come back, the lying prophet, he didn't get any punishment. Who was it that got the punishment? The man of God who had all the power with God, who stood up before the king. When the king says, Come, he said, Oh, no, not me. God told me. And here was another religious fellow who got him totally off track. And he said, All this thing happened, it says in verse 26, because he didn't obey the word of the Lord. It looks to me like all through it he was obedient. But see, God is interested in the fine things of life. Because God says, If you're faithful in the little things, you'll be faithful in the much. He says, And if you're unjust in the little things, you'll be unjust in the big ones. You say, Well, how does this apply to me? Well, I think it applies to all of us, because when God deals with us, he does not, you know, get the number 5 washtub out and kind of dump the whole truckload on us, or the whole tub load, and think, okay, now to obey that. See, it's just one little thing at a time that God wants us to obey. And a lot of things are so small, we think, oh, it really doesn't matter, like the man of God here. He probably thought, Well, I've already delivered the message to the elder and the king, and all this happened, it really doesn't matter. But to God, it mattered because he had commanded it so. I was preparing for a message, or trying to, I should say, for a conference, a weekend conference coming up. And so I think I shared this before at the weekend conference in Indiana. But I was walking in the park praying and saying, Now, God, what message do you want me to... And just nothing. I was like talking to this podium. I mean, it was nothing. And I was walking around in the park, and I'd read my Bible, and I'd walk, and I'd pray. And so I said, Well, God, is there anything that, you know, sort of hindering this, you know, kind of stopping you from answering? He says, Oh, yeah, Russ, that dirt. I thought, ooh, that dirt. About 2 weeks before, I was out working my yard, and alongside of our house, there's a flower bed, and the rain off the edge had made it sink down about this much, and I thought, boy, some good black dirt would help, and I looked across the next lot, and they were a bulldozer pushed up a whole lot of black dirt, and they were building a dental office there, and what do you know, Saturday morning, no one was working, and there was the handiest little wheelbarrow and shovel laying against that dirt, and so I thought, here's the thought that went through my mind. Let's see, the contractor, he came over and asked if he could use my water. You know, they screw the hose on the spigot on the side, and he said, I'll pay you for it. No, he never did. And I thought, well, let's see, he's using my water, So there I was over there scooping up that dirt, you know, and leveling it all off, and, you know, a little dirt, a big pile. Put the wheelbarrow back, and 2 weeks later, I hadn't thought about it once, but, you know, 2 weeks later, when I was out walking in the park, God says, that dirt. I says, boy, that's right, God, I did steal that dirt. Now about these talks, God. Now, Russ, about this dirt. Now, God, let's don't make a federal case out of this dirt. I mean, I confessed it. But you know what? God wouldn't let me. I mean, nothing happened until I told God, okay, God, I'll go fess up. So the next morning, I had to go tell this contract, by the way, I stole your dirt. I mean, he was more embarrassed than I was. But you know what? It didn't matter. See, because God had his finger on me. I was stopped. I mean, I was totally stopped. See, and I think there's a lot of things in our life when it comes some little thing that God puts his finger on, and we say, oh, God, that doesn't matter. And we try to go on, and God says, hey, what about this? So we go on doing some more of the Lord's work and say, now, God, I need your blessing. Well, God says, what about this? See, it's not some big, gigantic thing. It could be confessing to a person. It could be making something right that was wronged in the past. And see, and we have so much stuff. Don't try to dig out all the garbage that's back there. Too much. You wouldn't have any time to do anything else. Neither would I. But see, when God comes along and says, Russ, there's one right there. I want that and take care of. See, I had the same thing happen to me. I was down in a little town in Kansas. I was teaching the counselor training classes for one of the Billy Graham associates. And I was praying about the class that night. And you know what? God put his finger on a thing. Even before I was a Christian, I was counting the ballots for cheerleaders. When I was in junior high, and this girlfriend of mine, she just needed 3 more votes to win, so I put them in. Now, that was no problem. I mean, I hadn't thought of that in years. But you know, when I was down there in that motel praying about what to talk, God had his finger on me. And there was nothing I could do but sit down and write a couple letters, one to my old girlfriend, and one to the other girl who, you know, got aced out on it. Now, see, I don't think you have to, you know, dig in your old past. But if God goes digging around there, then he means business. I shared this little story about the dirt in the Midwest. A school teacher and his wife, well, actually, he was a college student then. Boy, God spoke to him down inside, because when he was in high school, he and another high school student ransacked an old restaurant and filling station, totally. And there was all, you know, these little towns, all kinds of scuttle about who did it, and boy, the police are after him, and they're about to catch him. But, and this fellow, he mentioned, he says, you know, my dad even got with me and says, now, did you do it? No, Dad, I didn't. No, not I. But, you know, after he's married, had become a Christian, he says, you know, God put his finger on me, and there was $8,000 worth of damage. He talked it over with his wife. He thought, boy, well, how will we do it? I mean, I don't have any money. They prayed and tried to figure out, and they thought, you know, sell the car, monthly installments. Even with all the figuring, they couldn't figure it out. But they knew one thing. God had his finger right there. So we went and talked to the fellow who owned it. He says, oh, it's been 6 years. Forget it and get out of here. Well, now, if someone gives you an order like that, you better do it quick. I mean, but see, it could have. It didn't always work out that smoothly. Another fellow who was a school teacher, when he was teaching school, he got involved with something. I don't know quite what it was, but rumors got so bad that in his record at the school, he was not invited back to teach the next year, and the records were so bad from the rumors that he couldn't get another teaching job, so he went to selling insurance. And then he became a Christian, and he thought, boy, why is it that God, you know, has this big black spot that I really, you know, he said, I didn't do that much. So he thought, well, I'm going back and talk to the superintendent. Oh, 8, 10 years had gone by. He went back and says, you know, I want to get this clear, because he says, since that time I've become a Christian, I was wrong in some of the things. The superintendent says, well, I appreciate you coming back. He picked up the file. He says, come with me. They went down to the boiler room. He opened the boiler and pitched it in. Well, see, some of these things are for good. You know, just for our benefit. If God puts his finger on other, I think most of them are for God's benefit to see if we'll be obedient. Because if we're obedient in the little things, God can trust us in the big things. So if you're trying to serve God, and you want to serve God, you say, what is it, God? I know one lady came up after a meeting, she says, ooh. Boy, the neighbor lady came over last week and says, oh, I worked out this store, and employees get discounts, but I'll get it for you, no problem. She says, well, I had to go tell her after I'd already bought those clothes, had to take them back and say, you know, I'm a Christian, and God won't let me do this. Now, that's hard. Because you think, ooh, what will they think? We're holier than thou? Well, yeah, they'll probably think that. Or worse. Or, boy, what would I mean, they were so nice in helping me. I mean, I'll lose a hearing. Maybe. But see, that's not important. The thing that's important is whether we're willing to obey God or not. Point number two. Obedience. When we're willing to obey, there's fantastic, lasting results that come with it. And would you turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 12? Because I think here, concerning the story of Abraham, because we have the complete story, I think it's really applies tonight. Listen, Genesis 12, starting with verse 1. Now the Lord said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and I will curse them that curseth thee. And in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So Abram departed, as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him, and Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. Can you imagine where Abram lived? They had money. Probably the most advanced civilization in the world. And he wanted him to go out to probably one of the most desolate ones. Can you imagine how the neighbors talked? I mean, he was 75 years old and Sarah was 65. And says, well, Abram, where are you going? Oh, that way. That way? Oh, sort of a vacation. No, not exactly. Well, not exactly. Well, how long are you going to stay, Abram? Well, I'm not coming back. Not coming back. We don't understand that, Abram. Now, what is the purpose of your trip? Well, you might not understand this, but I'm going to start a nation. A who? A nation? I mean, how many of you here, does anyone here know any nation founders? I mean, there's none except Abraham. And we have this recorded here in three religions, count Abraham as their founder, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. They all date back. It's the only one we have recorded in the world that I know anything about. But here old Abram was cruising out to start a nation. Well, we don't understand this, Abram. Now, just why is it you're going? Well, now, you might not understand this either, but I heard a voice. Oh, you heard a voice. I see. Do you know what? If you decide to obey God, the same thing is going to happen to you. Because God is going to ask you to do some strange things. Strange in the eyes and the ears of your friends and your relatives. Now, not strange to God. And probably not strange to you. But the people who are watching, they won't be able to figure it out. Let's look at the result. Turn on over. Genesis 17. See, can you imagine how it was for Abram to, you know, every Christmas send the Christmas card home? you know, and get letters back. Dear Abe, how's the nation coming? You know, and there every Christmas, just Abraham and Sarah, that's all, picture on it. No kids, no anything. And it's tough. Except this, 17. And when Abram was 90 years old and 9, the Lord appeared to Abram and said unto him, I am the Almighty God. Walk before me, and be thou perfect. And I will make my covenant between me and thee, and will multiply thee exceedingly. In other words, God met with him here and says, I said, Abram, because you've been faithful and you've launched out. I mean, 25 years went by before he had that son. I mean, can't you imagine what his relatives thought? I mean, dear Abe, the neighbor kids are really, they have chrome-plated camels. They're buying up the, you know, the 40 acres across the... Now, how's that nation coming? That was strange. See, I need to borrow a Bible. Turn on over to Genesis. I have one page missing here. It's the page I need. It's the only loose-leaf Bible on earth right here. Can I borrow your Bible? Genesis 22, page on over there. Ah, yours? No, it's not loose, I thought maybe I'd borrow a page. It's about the same size here. Genesis 22, 15. 15 through 18. And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time and said, By myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing, and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is up on the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemy, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou obeyed my voice. And do you know what? We are here tonight talking about the Bible because Abraham obeyed God. It looked strange. It sounded strange. It was odd to his relatives. His friends thought he was nuts, I'm sure. But we are here today, and continual blessing will be ours, the same as it was for Abraham. Now, the blessing doesn't have to continue through the little group that we're working for the blessing to continue. The navigators could go totally liberal and totally out of existence. But if we are in it, or the church you go to could end up, you know, totally disowning Christ and the Bible. But if you are obedient, God will work it out for that blessing to continue until the Lord comes. Some of the things that Abraham was involved in haven't turned out so good, except the blessing of Abraham continues year after year, century after century, until the Lord comes. And God says that in every nation of the earth, the blessing of Abraham will continue. Why? For one reason, because he obeyed God's voice. Well, you say, what do you do to obey? I mean, we can't start a nation, and we... Well, I think... Thank you. I think of a fellow that I knew back at the University of Nebraska, Tom Katosh. Tom was voted the most outstanding collegiate at the University of Nebraska his junior year. His freshman year, he got a straight 9 point. 8 is A, 9 is A+. He became a Christian his sophomore year, or the end of his freshman year, I guess it was. And he had a big decision to make. Because during his sophomore year, he was going up in the political ladder of the campus. And I said, well, Tom, how about going to a fraternity meeting and give your testimony just how you became a Christian? He didn't answer me for a while, and then he says, well, Russ, why don't you wait a couple days and I'll let you know. I thought, what's the big strain? But he decided to go. A year later, he told me about it. He says, you know, Russ, that was one of the hardest decisions I've ever made, because I realized if I made that decision, it would end my political career on campus. And it did. But he did it. Well, some other fantastic things happened through Tom. One, he was up for a Rhodes Scholarship. And he was interviewed by the president of the college and some others at the college down in Omaha. And they said, by the way, Tom, what is the most exciting thing that you've done this year? Now, he'd been to Russia during the summer and a lot of things, and he says, well, the most exciting thing that I've done is I went to a navigator conference, and there I learned how to help men spiritually. What? A navigator? What? Oh, help? Yeah, he says, basically, to help a person, you need to relate them properly with Jesus Christ. And when they're related properly with Jesus Christ, then you have to help them grow spiritually by getting in the Bible and teach them how to pray and get answers. And this has been the most challenging, exciting thing I've learned this year. Oh, we see. And he didn't get it. He was far more qualified than the people who did get it. And it wasn't easy for him. The chancellor of the university got with him and says, Tom, because Tom had led his son to the Lord, and the chancellor is now the new secretary of agriculture, and his son just took a church, I heard him preach last Sunday in Denver. He says, Tom, I won't recommend you for anything. Never. Because you're wrecking our family. Now, that's not easy to take. Because his son had become a Christian, and there was no unity in the family anymore. But, you know, there's people like Cliff Hardin Jr. and other people who God continues to have their lives changed through Tom Katosh. And I think it was because he made some basic decisions to be obedient to God no matter what the cost. Now, for most of us, the cost won't be that high. And we might think it's that high, but it won't be. Because God, see, is in the business of blessing us far beyond the little thing that we might have to give up, or the little thing that he might ask us to do, or the little thing that he might say, you better take care of that. But, oh, the blessing that goes on because of obedience. And like Abraham, he says that we will be sitting here tonight because Abraham decided that he was willing to give up his only son, Isaac, because God told him to. Well, I think we have three things I'd like to share on that will hinder us from being obedient. One, will you turn to Numbers 13? I would classify this lack of faith. This is the story of the 12 spies that went over to Canaan to spy out the land. They came back with their report. Now remember all the background here. He had promised the children of Israel that they would be aliens in a foreign land for 400 years. And then they would be brought out. In fact, Joseph was so sure about it down there that he even had his bones carried back into the promised land. Everything, the stage was set, and it had been planned for the centuries that this would happen, and they would get the promised land. And now they were right at the brink of getting the promised land. They'd sent out the spies. The spies had come back. Listen to this. 13:30. Let's start up a couple more. Let's start 27. And they told him and said, we came into the land whither thou sendest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey. And this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. Moreover, we saw the children of Anak there, and the Amalekites dwell in the land in the south, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea, and by the coast of Jordan. Now listen to 30. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in theirs. They were totally confused, weren't they? He says, well, we look like grasshoppers. How they know how they looked? They didn't get a giant alongside and say, hey, by the way, how do we look when you looked at us? But they were saying it here. Isn't that right? You know, a little false information or a little false imagination, because this was imagination. They had no facts on this. They said, ooh, they come with the sons of the giants. How'd they know that? Hey, giant, come over here. Let me see your family tree. Oh, I see your dad was a giant too. Pure guesswork. And you know, that's the thing that stops us. Because God tells us to do something, and we say, oh, that would be too far. Well, God, you don't understand that I've never done a thing like this before. Well, neither had the children of Israel. Well, but God, I wouldn't know what to say. And they would have words that, they would know that I had, right. See, because when we start answering back to God, it's confusion and it's vain imagination and it's lack of faith. Because God had given all the promises that he would take them in and he would protect them and he would provide for them. And he wanted to give them the land because he promised it. Not only that, look at the next step. What happened to the people who decide not to obey? 14:1. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, would to God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would to God we had died in the wilderness. And wherefore had the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? That's confusion. Who was it that entered the land? Their children. They didn't say, oh, we're going to be a prey. They said, ooh, our wives and children. It happened to be the children got in without their help. But see, as soon as we decide not to obey, all kinds of confusion comes in. And I think it falls in the class of lack of faith. Now, to bring it a little more down to reality, I was with a Christian worker up in North Dakota, and we were just talking, driving up to the campus, and we just picked up a parking ticket. It's one of those little signs about this big, you know, that says no parking, you know, from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m., you know, and there's mud on the sign. You couldn't see it if you wanted to. That's my story, of course. And so I got this little ticket on the windshield, and so as we were driving around the corner, this fellow, he's a Christian worker, he said, hey, I got one of those the other day in the parking lot, but I was driving a car from out of state, and so I just took and tore it up because they couldn't check up. And when I got home, I thought, you know what, let's see, I know that fellow, and he really wants to be obedient. So I wrote him a letter. I said, you know, I think if, I think you want to be obedient. That's the way you seem to me, but the Bible does say do things honest in the sight of all men. And, you know, if there was a big, chubby-looking cop standing beside that car, you wouldn't have torn up that ticket. You know, it says do it in the sight of all men. It's okay, cop, I'll just tear it up here and leave it. Hey, you don't do that. I says, looks at me. And he told me afterwards the turmoil that he went through. He thought, let's see, $5. Well, he could see it. He says, my imagination was running wild. He says, I was going to write into the school violation department and say, boy, I goofed up, and here's the $5, and just put anonymous on the bottom. He thought, no, that wouldn't be honest either. He thought, but if I sign my name, he says, I could see it on the front page of the school paper. Christian worker repents. Isn't that right? We start thinking that. But a lot worse than that happens if we don't obey when God speaks to us. So he says, well, I didn't know what to do. I put $5 in the envelope, wrote him a confession, signed my name. He says, 3 days later, I got a letter back saying, this is so honest, here's your $5 back. Now, it doesn't always turn out like that. I tell the success stories. You know, sometimes it's, you know, okay, violate 3 months, pay the 25. But it doesn't matter whether it's five or you get the five back or you pay the 25, because being obedient to God is far more important than all this other things, because God can add 25 or 2,500 or 25,000. There's no problem to God. But lack of faith will stop us. In the life of a couple, I think finances are probably the thing that will hinder us more than anything else. I remember two couples from the Northwest. They were going to come to a conference like this. One of the couples were from Portland, and one was from Vancouver, British Columbia. The couple from Vancouver, they sort of had money. I mean, they didn't seem to be a problem. The couple in Portland, he works for the city. His four children, I mean, he just ekes by from payday to payday, and you think, well, that's the way I do. He's same class. But they had no saving, and they were both going to come to this conference. So they thought, well, 100 and some for registration, $100 to come here, and motel bills. They figured it out from Portland. It was about $250. And so the other couple figured it out, $250, and both decided they'd go. The couple from Vancouver drove up about 6 hours in Kanloops, British Columbia, left off their daughter, drove back to Vancouver getting ready to go to the conference. They got in the house, they opened their mail, and they realized some extra bills had come in that they hadn't counted on. They thought, oh, boy, I guess we can't go then because we figured it all out, but these extra bills, we just can't do it. So they called up the couple in Portland saying, you know, you have to go on your own, and they went back and picked up their daughter, decided not to go. Because a little bit of bills. They almost had it. It was close. The couple in Portland, they started from scratch. So they started praying, now, God, we need $250. Now, they didn't know how they were going to get it because I've been in their home before. They're the kind that squeeze the toothpaste easy at the end of the month just to make it, you know, for payday. But they started praying. And so his boss came by and said, you know, I'm going to moonlight a job out here surveying. Would you like to help me? Dick thought, yeah, why don't I help you? He said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll pay all your expenses and $6 an hour. So he thought, I think I'll do that. The day before they came to the conference, they got a check, $248, from that little surveying project they had. But see, either way, see, it's by faith. And so many times we make decisions, someone approaches us, hey, how about going to a conference out of Glen Eyre? Oh, boy, my boss never let me off. What about God? Well, we could never finance that because we did take a two-week trip last year. Well, what about God? Most people make decisions, life-changing decisions, never praying about it because of lack of faith. They make decisions down the line. Oh, no, because some little circumstance. Oh, we don't have the money. Well, my boss wouldn't. Well, I don't know whether my wife would let me go. Or, well, my husband, he's had enough religion for the year. And probably that's true, but I don't know. But see, there's so many things that we say, oh, no, it wouldn't work out. And on circumstances, which comes down to lack of faith. Well, I think there's another thing, and that's the fear of failure. This one is probably more important or hinders more people in obeying God than the matter of lack of faith. 2 Timothy 1:7 says, God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. When fear comes in, it is not of God. Now, I know that fear does amazing things to you. Because in the Bible, it calls it the spirit of fear. You know, it's not something like a glass of water that sits on a table. Oh, yeah, there's fear. No, fear is a spirit that can grip you and grab you and hold on to you. And make you think all kinds of things. In the Northwest, we were talking about having a Congress on Discipleship. This was right after Billy Graham had the Congress on Evangelism in Berlin, so we thought, why don't we have a Congress on Discipleship? Everybody's having Congresses now. I see it all over. So as we got to talk, the plans got bigger and bigger and bigger, and so finally when we decided on it, and it was a really hard decision, very hard decision for me because I thought, what if we fail? But the plan, everybody got so excited, we decided to rent the city opera house in Seattle, which cost us $640. And so we kept figuring it out. We had a manual made up and all kinds of things. And the price got a little higher than we thought. And it was cost $7 to go for one day. Now, if you've been to a Navigator one-day conference, you know they're $3 or $350. But it kind of grew. So we knew we had to have about $1,400 or $1,500 there just to break even financially. Well, the night before, I called up and there was about 400 registrations. That night, I went through all kinds of contortions, wondering, let's see, how will we get out of debt? I just bought a new car 2 months before that. I'll sell my new car. I was scheming all night long, trying to figure out how will I do it. I mean, God, you know, and it wasn't until early the morning of the conference. First of all, I told God, okay, God, if we go broke, we go broke. because I didn't have any reserve. I couldn't figure out how to do it. And I was thinking, how did I get into this? How did I? I was beating myself, thinking it was so stupid. Who talked me into it? I mean, really. I'm sure I aged 10 years on that one project. But I told God, I said, okay, God, now, it looks to me like this is a giant stumbling block. And I don't know how we got into it, but I want you to turn this into a stepping stone. Now, that was not out of faith. That was out of desperation. Because I didn't want to sell my new car. Let's face it. I'm sort of practical when it comes to that. You know, it wasn't until I was going down to the Opera House that I got an idea of how to get out of debt. Because we figured it out, and it looked like we'd be right at 700 showed up. But even with that, we figured it out, we'd be 1,400 in debt. And on the way to the Opera House, I thought, oh, why don't I get all the college students together and tell them that? Hey, I'm going to go in debt. How about helping me? I told the college student, I says, if you'll help me get out of debt, I'll get all the couples together and see if they'll raise scholarships for you to go to the Wingding that we had last fall. So they were all enthusiastic. Do you know how much they pledged? 1,400. Do you know how much the couples gave? 2,000. So we came out nice and in the black. Now I can tell that, but I haven't launched out on another. I mean, that was really hard on me down inside, and it was purely because of fear, the spirit of fear, and the fear of failure. But see, God, if He leads you in, He will also lead you through and out. Because God is God. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever, and He will do this. Well, the third thing I think that will hinder us, and this is more verbal and more direct pressure, and I call this friends and family. Deuteronomy 1. And we're back to the children of Israel again. This is another report about the spies as to why they didn't go into the land. Deuteronomy 1:25. Listen to what it says. And they took the fruit of the land in their hand and brought it down into us and brought us word again and said, it is a good land which the Lord our God doth give us. Notwithstanding, ye would not go up, but rebelled against the commandment of the Lord your God, and ye murmured in your tents and said, because the Lord hated us, He hath brought us forth out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us. Whither shall we go up? Listen to what it says next. Our brethren have discouraged our hearts. It wasn't those giants in the land that stopped the Israelites from going over. And it wasn't the fact that the land eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And it wasn't that the giants were of the sons of Anak, which came of the giants. That wasn't the problem at all. It was our brethren have discouraged our hearts. Now here's what happens. So you're working for McDonnell Douglas. You're pounding little rivets and little holes and flinching them over on the backside. And so the foreman, on Friday nights, you walk out and he says, Jack, I've been watching you and boy, I've talked to the boys upstairs and we have decided that when you come back to work on Monday, you will not be making $3 an hour. You'll be making $5.85, and you will be the foreman. And so you kind of go out of there thinking, wow, boy, I'm glad I worked hard. And boy, good news. And so you go to church on Sunday morning and in the Sunday school class, and they're kind of asking for blessings. And you say, boy, God has really been good to me. And you stand up and says, boy, as I was walking out of the work, my boss says, you'll not be making $3 an hour anymore. You'll be making $5.85, and I'll be the foreman. Boy, and everybody says, that's great. Boy, that's really good. I mean, Jack, we knew you could do it. Boy, think what you can do now. The next week, you go to a missionary conference. Same Jack. And on Saturday night, the Holy Spirit of God speaks to you about going to the mission field. And you think, well, I'm not really prepared, but if God speaks and I want to obey, I better do it. So the next Sunday morning, you go to the same Sunday school class, and they ask for blessings, and you stand up and you say, I have good news. I'm going to the mission field. Are you sure you're called? Boy, my aunt, she went to Africa, and after being there a year and a half, she knew she was in the wrong place, and And she had to come home, and now she's sort of wandering around wondering what to do. And who do you think will supply for your family? Don't you know that your daughter is 13? Our brethren have discouraged our hearts. Any time that God speaks to you and you decide to do the will of God, watch out for the brethren. And don't be one of these brethren or sistern. Sistern, that's wrong. Don't, whatever that is, don't be that. Isn't that right? We grill people who want to do the will of God without mercy. Probably because we're not willing to. But God, see, wants you to obey because there's eternal blessing in the matter of obedience. And for every missionary who has failed on the field, there are 5,000 who have failed at home. And for every, you know, sick missionary, there are 10, you know, 1,000 at home. Because Job 6:7 says, man is born to trouble as the sparks go up. And doing the will of God is not getting in this sea of pleasure and ease. A lot of times getting in the will of God is to getting into trouble and problems. Because there's problems and trouble everywhere. But all kinds of arguments come from the brethren as to why you shouldn't do the will of God. Well, just in closing, one thing, when God speaks to you about little things, do that. Secondly, remember that there's fantastic, lasting results being obedient to the thing God speaks to your heart. It's about in the matter of little things. Thirdly, the hindrances are lack of faith, fear of failure, and friends. Couple fellows, just one story in closing. A couple fellows I had the privilege of working with 3 years ago in the Philippines. We had an overseas project where we were going to have some student outreach. I had the privilege of being on a little team there in the Philippines with a Korean, a Chinese, a Filipino doctor, medical doctor, and myself. This medical doctor, Dr. Nathan Banda, came to know the Lord in the Billy Graham Crusade there. Had a wife and one daughter. Now, there are so many doctors in Manila that it's almost impossible to get a job. He opened his own clinic, and he was taking in 50 cents a day because all the doctors want to be in Manila where the money is. So he worked for the University of the East 7 months just to get a job. He worked with no pay for 7 months to get a job. Well, God spoke to him that he should be involved in this training program that we had there. It was about 5 weeks in the Philippines, and then it was a couple weeks in Saigon and another month in Singapore. And so he talked to the officials there at the University of the East about quitting. And they said, well, if you quit, there's too many doctors standing in line for us to hold a job that long. He said, maybe you could come back and work part-time or something, but we couldn't promise you anything. And on the team, we talked about this. He says, you know, Russ, he says, the navigators, they don't owe me any living. He says, they don't have to be responsible for my wife and daughter because God spoke to me that I should be involved in this program. And he says, you know, not knowing what was going to happen when he came back, but he says, you know, God spoke and I want to obey. There was another fellow, Tukumpai Mia, was an architect. He also quit his job. And people thought that was pretty strange. We think, oh, quit your job, you can get another. It's not that easy in Manila. So, actually, the first time out witnessing, this Dr. Banda led a fellow the Lord. In fact, the first time this little team went out of a Korean, an American, a Filipino, and a Chinese, five Catholics made decisions. So God was really working, especially through Dr. Banda. 1 month after getting back to the States, I got a phone call from one of my friends saying that Tukumpai Mia's sister had gone by to see him. She heard he was sick, and just as she was talking to him there, he died, looking her right in the eyes. Some virus that the doctor didn't expect at all. 3 weeks later, I got another letter saying that Dr. Banda had a motorcycle accident and had hit his head, and they weren't sure he would live. 1 month to the day after Tecumbai Mia died, Dr. Nathan Bonda died. You know, and I've thought about that many times since. I thought, you know, 2 months before their death, that was some strange things they were doing. For a medical doctor to quit his job after working 7 months for nothing just to get it, and for Tecumbai Mia, an architect, quit his job, pretty strange. Especially when jobs are so hard to come by. But, you know, I thought, of those two fellows, I think they could stand before the Lord without hesitation and say, I finished the work which thou gavest me to do. Now, we like to think that our work is when we're 85. Well, we'll look back and there'll be hundreds and thousands of people and everybody will say, boy, you're the pioneer who did it. But in the will of God, it's not that way. Because being obedient to God is a day by day, small thing by small thing, and then the fantastic results of a lasting eternal ministry comes about. And when we get our eyes set on God and on following Him, the words of a hymn will come true. Turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in His wonderful face, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim. See, in the light of His glory and grace, and in the light of being obedient to Him because of the fantastic results that He wants to give us. Shall we pray?